Welcome to the Trinity Heights Church podcast. I'm Stephen Chern, and we are a community of Christians and skeptics exploring the biblical narrative together. Good morning, guys. Sawyer, thank you so much for leading us in worship. That was beautiful. Thank you. Now, the under 10s can go downstairs with Kerry and Julia, I believe. They can head down. And if you're over 10 and above, which I think everyone else is, you are welcome to stay. And we're going to have our reading. So, Ben, you want to come on up? And now you've got a mouthful of bagel, you know, I figured I'd ask you now.
Acts 17, 16 through 18. Mm-hmm. Okay. While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace, day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." So they said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection.
Thank you so much. Well, good morning again, and welcome to Trinity Heights. What do you think of the seats this way around? I quite like it because people can kind of slip in late without being shamed. Although I think Raf said last week, he said it's good we can shame people as they come in late. He's the accountability. So he's the pastor of accountability and shame at Trinity Heights, a very important part of church life. And also people, if they're bored during Eric's sermon, you know, they can get up and go and help themselves to coffee and some more bagels. So we'll keep moving things around and see what works. Well, this morning we're in our second part of the series, which Eric masterfully kicked off for us last week, with this view from 50,000 feet of the prophetic imagination, right? And what we're going to do now is we're going to sort of zoom in to some of the themes that Eric talked about in sort of from the 50,000 feet. We're going to zoom in and add a little bit more texture and detail to some of those items that Eric sort of listed for us last week. The opposite of the prophetic imagination is what the Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann has called the imperial imagination. The imperial imagination tells us that this is the way things are. And the imperial imagination not only tells us that this is the way things are now, but the imperial imagination says to each one of us, remember, this is the way things have always been, that this is the way things are always going to be. In other words, the imperial imagination is very good at perpetuating the myth of its own eternity. But the prophetic imagination, and actually those two get mixed up, actually, and that's kind of what we're going to get onto today. The prophetic imagination is able to see through all of this imperial propaganda. You thought I was going to say something else, didn't you? And the reason why the prophetic imagination is able to see through the imperial propaganda is because, first of all, the prophetic imagination is able to see through the way that the now is being presented. It knows that things aren't the way they say they are, things aren't the way they seem. And the prophetic imagination also has access to deep and ancient memories. And because it has access to deep and ancient memories, it can remember that this isn't actually how things have always been. And because the prophetic imagination can see through the way that the now is being presented and can remember things differently, it is also able to imagine and hope for an entirely different future. But of course, in order for the prophetic imagination to do all the things that it does, to be able to see through the way the now has been presented, remember a completely different past, and imagine an entirely different future, to be able to do all that, it has to be free from the imperial imagination. And the way that the prophetic imagination finds its freedom from the imperial, dominant imperial imagination, is in relationship to a God who is completely and utterly free. And so that's what we're looking at this morning, is how to this tension, how does the prophetic imagination get free from the dominant imperial imagination? How does that happen? And what does it mean to say that God is free? What would it mean to say that God is not free? Aren't all gods free? As we explore this, I want you to first of all think about the archetypal prophet Moses. Eric mentioned last week, he's the archetypal prophet because he's really the one who kicks off the whole prophetic Jewish biblical tradition, right? So he walks into Pharaoh's throne room, and you know, if he hadn't been quite so nervous that day and so focused on the task, because his task was what? He was going to confront the emperor, right? The ruler of the empire. So if he hadn't been quite so nervous that day, he might have noticed certain things in the emperor's throne room. And what he would have seen is he would have seen in Pharaoh's throne room statues and signs and symbols of their many gods. Because you see, the Egyptians were a very open-minded bunch. And they didn't have just one stuffy, all-powerful, self-important god. They had multiple different gods, 1,500 gods that we know of. And so that means there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, more gods we just haven't dug up yet. Maybe we'll unearth them one day. That'll be an exciting excavation. And so there is Moses standing in Pharaoh's throne room, surrounded by these gods. Now we can follow the arc of this prophetic ministry all the way from Moses to the Apostle Paul. And as Ben read for us just now, the Apostle Paul is walking into the city of Athens. And he says the first thing he notices is he said he's very distressed. Why is he distressed? Because he sees that the city is full of idols. Why does that distress Paul? Why is he bothered by other people's gods? Is he a little bit narrow-minded, you know, tunnel vision, a bit intolerant, bigoted? Why do other people's gods bother him, right? Why is he distressed? Maybe he needs his imagination freeing. There are all sorts of gods out there in the universe, Paul, or because we're good pluralists, perhaps we could say, well, there's all sorts of ways of seeing the world. I want to press into this a little further, and the way we're going to do that is we're going to play a game. It's a game that we played once before, many years ago, and looking around the room now, I think there are only a couple of you who were actually here last time we played it, so it's time to play the game again. So when I was a kid, I used to read a lot of comic books, and the superhero comic books, and my parents, truth be told, were a little bit worried about me because that's all I read, but that's another story. But some of you may not have read the comic books, but you might have seen the movies or some of the TV shows. Any of you still watching the Marvel movies? Some of you? Some of you, yeah. I burned out on those several years ago. But I know some of you are fans, so I won't insult you. But I was always a DC guy myself. And so here we go. Nail our colors to the mast. And actually, what we're going to do now is we're going to play Guess the Universe. That's the game we're going to play this morning. Guess the Universe. So each of these, DC and Marvel, have their own universe, and they're stocked with their own superheroes. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to name a superhero for you, and what you've got to do is just shout out whether they belong to the DC or Marvel universe. And so we'll start off with my favorite superhero, who doesn't really have any superpowers, and that is Batman. Does he belong to DC or Marvel? He's, yeah, absolutely. Iron Man. Black Panther, Wonder Woman, The Hulk, Superman, Spider-Man. Yeah, Marvel. Yeah, that's right. What a well-educated bunch you are. That's impressive. Okay, so what does any of this have to do with Paul and Rome and Moses and Egypt and the prophetic imagination and the freedom of God? Well, let's see if we can tie all of this together, shall we? It is absolutely true that Egypt and Rome were welcoming of new and different gods, but gods who already belong to their familiar, mythic, and religious universe. In other words, if you're in the DC universe, you welcome the DC superhero, but if a Marvel superhero shows up in the DC universe, okay, maybe it's a movie mashup or something, but you know that there's something wrong. Something's out of place. They don't really belong here. So Egypt and Rome, they welcomed other gods who belonged to their mythic universe. How did they know if they belonged or not? Easy. Because you would be able to integrate those gods so easily, without upset, without incident, without turmoil, into their universe, because they were just another iteration, a new expression, a different expression of their own same political, ideological, religious sensibilities and temperament. In other words, they were tolerant of what they found tolerable. Well, aren't we all? You know what wouldn't be tolerated? Anything that came along to subvert and undermine that established world. And I'll give you an example of the sort of thing I'm talking about. I may have shared this story before. There was a man called Pedanius Segundus, good Roman name, and it was in AD 61 when he was murdered by one of his slaves. And this brought into effect the ancient rule that said if in these circumstances this happens, not just the slave who murdered his master needs to be put to death, but the entire household of slaves. In this case, there were 400 men, women, and children who were going to be executed. And the Roman Senate determined that yes, The ancient ways had to be honored and upheld and followed. We've got to do this. That's not the interesting bit. That's the horrifying bit, right? It's horrifying, right? But the interesting bit is that not once during their proceedings did anyone evoke the clemency of the gods, the justice and mercy of the gods, the virtue of the gods. In other words, no one was invoking the gods to challenge the morality of what they're about to do. Of course they didn't. Why would they? The whole point of the gods was to sustain and serve the social order and power structures that were already in place, which rested upon pervasive and relentless cruelty. They were not there to call into question or disrupt or overthrow or transform. So you see, the gods in Egypt and Athens and the Roman Empire, the multiplicity of gods, were not an expression of sort of this generous, broad-minded tolerance. That's a complete fiction. That's a bad misunderstanding of the situation. That's not what that's a picture of. These gods, this is how you need to think of them. These gods were boundary markers. I think of the gods as boundary markers beyond which you couldn't pass. They're the ones who determine the limits of acceptable thought in Egypt and the limits of acceptable thought in Rome, so that if you listen carefully, when you walked into Egypt, you would hear the gods tell you, "Welcome to Egypt. These are the patterns and ways of thinking that we have here." And if you walked into Roman Empire, you would have heard the Roman gods tell you, "Welcome to Rome. These are the thoughts you can think here." Because these gods were not there to free your imagination. They were there to imprison your imagination, to captivate your imagination. Because, and this is the important bit, because these gods themselves were not free. These gods were servants and they were slaves of the established order. So imagine for a moment that you're one of these slaves who was about to be executed in those 400 in that household, or imagine that you're being worked to the bone in Egypt. In a sense, the gods have sealed your fate. And what you would long for in that situation is a god who is not bound by the cultural norms. A god who is not co-opted by the machinery of the state. A god who could offend. A god who could present a challenge to the dominant order. And the kind of god who could do that is a god who would have to be completely and utterly free. Wrap up here in a minute, but it would be really easy right now to start throwing stones at some other church and in some other cultural context in another country, or hey, even better, in our own country. Right, that's really easy to do. Some pastors do that. They love sort of saying, "Hey, look at those people over there, how terrible they are," and they think they're being prophetic, but that's not really being prophetic. You're just giving red meat to your congregation and everyone likes it and everyone leaves very happy and you're patting each other on the back, telling yourselves how right you are. Yeah, this is not being prophetic. So, for instance, I could easily point to the Bible Belt and look at the churches there and go, "Look at the way they wrap the Bible in the flag. Why would you do that? Look at what they've done. They've essentially taken Jesus and they've stuck on a little bit of conservative ideology, or actually sometimes it's just conservative ideology with a little bit of Jesus stuck on at the end. Keeps falling off, sticking back on, fell off again, sticking back on. But that's not the trap we're going to fall into. This is New York City, right? This is Manhattan. And so what the trap we're going to fall into, if anything, is the other way around, isn't it? What's going to happen is you're going to end up with Jesus with a little bit of progressive ideology stuck on the end. Or we're going to end up with just progressive ideology with a little bit of Jesus stuck on the end for good measure. And it's even more complicated for us. And this is where it gets uncomfortable, because let's just be honest about this congregation. We represent the educated, cultured class, which means you're part of the administrative class, the managerial class, which means you run the banks. One of our guys, elders, is over in China right now on behalf of one well-known bank. Right, so we run the banks, we run the corporations, we run the institutions, the Ivy League schools, we run the new up-and-coming startups. So we just, the media. And so because of our proximity to all of these major institutions, we are much more vulnerable to their influence. And therefore, we get that much closer. And it's this very precarious situation we're in. This is how Jesus Christ gets co-opted. And what happens is we're in a situation, as I pointed out before, where it's incredible, but the Ivy Leagues on social issue after social issue after moral issue after political and ideologically, you name it, ideologically, politically, socially, the Ivy League schools are aligned with the political establishment, who are aligned with the legacy mainstream media, who happen to also be aligned with the intelligence agencies, who, and the list goes on. And then, as the educated culture class, align ourselves with them. We're going to look at this in more detail next week, but I'll just give you a very quick example of how this works out. So suddenly we're being told, well, today we're going to post a black square. Today we're going to post a rainbow flag. Today we're going to post a Ukrainian flag. Now the point is not what do you think about these issues or not. I'm not interested in getting into that. That's not the point. We can have interesting discussions about that if you want. I'm happy to, but that's not the point. The point is why are we being told by all of these institutions lined up with each other that these are the things that you can think about? Why are the gods telling us, welcome to New York City, these are the thoughts you can think here? So this is the kind of question that we need to be asking ourselves in our particular context. This is how we make sure that our imaginations get freed from the dominant imperial imagination. Because the point is, what is it that's being framed out? Why are we being told, these are the things you can focus on, these are the thoughts you can think here. What is being framed out? What is it we're not meant to be seeing here? Now, they're not going to say, don't think about this, right? Because that would defeat the purpose, because then you start thinking about it, right? Don't think about the elephants or whatever, right? You're going to think about it. That's not how that works. But what is being framed out of the picture? What is it they don't want us to see? What are the gods telling us, really, in not so many words, not to look at? Because this is how we get our imaginations free so that we can be prophetic. This is how we make sure that our Lord Jesus Christ remains the Lord Jesus Christ, another God co-opted for the purposes of empire. Amen.
The Trinity Heights Church podcast is recorded right here in New York City. If you happen to be in the city, then feel free to join us in person. You can get more information about our service times through trinityheightschurch.com. Also, if you feel compelled to contribute to the ongoing ministry of Trinity Heights Church, then go to our giving page. Thanks for listening.